I think we need to be smart about how we site and permit and approve projects. I think there are really good examples across the country about involving Indigenous peoples in projects. And all the polling that I see suggests that, yeah, on balance, Canadians are A-OK with building electricity infrastructure.
Welcome to The Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 109, episode 109 of The Flux Capacitor. I've been chatting with the industry's business leaders, thought leaders, new market players, and stakeholders, the folks that have been pondering the future of how we create, move, trade, and use energy, and what the future changes will mean for electricity companies, regulators, society, and customers. I hope these conversations have given you, the listener, a sense of the conversations that are taking place in the sector. My guest on the podcast today is...
I'm Jason Chioloy, Managing Director of Power Advisory, LLC.
Jason has deep roots in the energy sector and has been at the center of many of the market changes we've seen over the past several decades. He joined me for a conversation about leadership in the electricity sector. We also chat about the MOU between Newfoundland and Labrador and Quebec, and the role his firm played in its development, and the need for bold leadership and a focus on the fundamentals to unlock Canada's energy potential. We also talk about the current tariff challenges with the U.S. and the hope that this results in the lowering of barriers here in Canada. Here is my conversation with Jason Chioloy, recorded on Zoom on March 10th, 2025. Jason, welcome to the podcast. I think a great place to start for the listener would be to tell the listener a little bit of something about the company, about Power Advisory LLC.
Thanks, Francis. So Power Advisory is an electricity management consulting firm that's been founded back in 2007, and we've grown to today to 35 consultants with offices in Toronto, Calgary, and Boston. Mm-hmm. So we're very active across North America, coast to coast in Canada, in virtually every province. We do lots of work across the U.S., but most of our concentration has been in the northeast part of the U.S.
So maybe a place to kind of pull a little bit of thread. Most recently, I recall seeing you in the news because you and people within your firm had worked on that MOU on Churchill Falls between the governments of Newfoundland, Labrador, and Quebec. I thought it was it's a really interesting project, and it's going to unlock certainly some opportunities for the future development in the Northeast. But can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to work on that project, and how the work came together?
Sure. Well, simply put, it's Canada's biggest deal.
Yeah.
For supply, and what makes it very extraordinary. It's two provinces coming together that I think have mutual drivers to want to see a deal through. So in total, it's about 9,300 megawatts. 5,400 of that is existing supply. Mm-hmm. And therefore, 3,900 would be new developments. And when you look at the projects and the existing facility for a 50-year period, it's like a $225 billion deal, mm-hmm. which is outstanding. And it's outstanding that the two provinces and the two utilities were able to come together. I've always positioned the Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, as an essential starting point. It provides a framework mm-hmm. with guardrails to help guide future discussions that are starting pretty soon. Mm-hmm. In terms of power purchase agreements and other agreements to move forward with the initiative.
Mm-hmm. Huge project. And it also Given some of the, some of the other work that you've been doing and the firm has been doing for like a broad swath of different folks, but particularly in the renewable space, this probably becomes the anchor for renewable development in the kind of the northeast of the continent for decades to come, doesn't it?
We think so, and we think that this is a really big and good example of how utilities in Canada and other stakeholders in Canada and governments in Canada can really work together. I had that view before President Trump was elected for a second term, and the present issues our country is dealing with regarding tariffs that appear to be on the horizon. I have that view even more so now because I'm seeing the country really organize. Barriers are being broken down in terms of wanting to work together. And I think electricity is a source of, pun intended, power for Canada. And I think such an agreement and such volume of the project can really be a leader in terms of liberalizing access and markets and building infrastructure across Canada to move electricity. And we'll therefore be in a better position to help our own industries, help our own customers, and we will have leverage over the Americans the more stuff we do like this in the future with this infrastructure bill.
And it occurs to me that this MOU was signed in December, a month or two before everybody is now talking about breaking down interprovincial trade barriers. So this was just before that wave. How confident are you that this is going to spur more cooperation, collaboration interprovincially? Because it's always been north south, and we will get to tariffs. But I mean, I think it's really interesting, to your point that there seems to be a real interest and appetite for looking at reducing those barriers between provinces. And this was the first really major project that would kind of fall under that rubric.
I think it's awfully real. And I was asked to appear before the House of Assembly in St. John's, Newfoundland on January 8th. So they had representation from Newfoundland Labrador Hydro executives for 2 days prior to myself and my colleague Brady Alk appearing before the MHAs. And in that session, I was very adamant to say, I believe this is a good deal. And the starting point of a good deal are two motivated parties. And that's why I've got a lot of faith that all of the agreements, such as the power purchase agreement, the joint development agreements, and things like that, will be executed. And then we will put shovels in the ground and there will be greater cooperation. I think this is going to be a very strong beacon for the Canadian electricity industry and for Canadian industry. And I think Atlantic Canada has an outstanding chance and a really good position to be leaders because it's not just the MOU and the forthcoming agreements to codify everything regarding the 9,300 megawatts from Labrador to Quebec. It's also the transmission line that was announced with some Canadian Infrastructure Bank funding between New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. And there's still other transmission projects as part of the Atlantic Loop that I think will resurface. And I think based on what Nova Scotia is doing and Newfoundland Labrador are doing by way of opening up the potential for offshore wind, those are big projects that are going to need more transmission. And therefore, I see Atlantic Canada becoming a real strong electricity hub. And I think that's exactly the type of thing that we need right now.
So when you were you mentioned you appeared before the House of Assembly in January, You weren't there just as a cheerleader for the project. I mean, you had you and Brady and other members of your team. You've been involved in this project to a great degree. The last how long have you been on this one?
Yeah, so leading up to January earlier this year, we were working on the whole project for over a year and a half. So we did most of the analysis when it came to shaking down the Quebec market and really understanding their needs, shaking down the Labrador needs, shaking down the island needs in Newfoundland, shaking down the export potential from Labrador as well as from Quebec, and really slicing and dicing what the value is for this amount of energy over such a long period of time. So we provide a lot of the analytical support. We also provide a lot of strategic support given experience in terms of contract negotiations, contract structure, and things like that. So it was really fascinating because it was a truly team effort. Alongside us, Newfoundland Labrador, I'd also engaged JP Morgan to help on the financial side and two different law firms, a local law firm, McInnes Cooper, and then Steichen Elliott, that's based out of Montreal. So they put together a really super team. And I keep telling our people in Power Advisory, the good people of Newfoundland Labrador and the good people of Newfoundland Labrador Hydro. So they were absolutely a joy to work with. So I'm even more pleased that they were able to get the MOU over the finish line.
Hey, listen, let me just do a bit of a tangent. But it's a question that I ask folks that come on the podcast. And it's a question about your journey. I know the listener does find it interesting when I ask people about their journey. And every show, I make the same joke. So, Jason, when you were a little kid on the playground, did you always dream of being the manager partner of a company like Power Advisory? But what was your journey?
Well, when I was a little kid, I was really a big fan of Darryl Sittler and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, I mean, whether it was road hockey or foot hockey or ice hockey, that was my dream. But I always, took school seriously, and I studied economics, and with my master's degree, I actually used it, and I fell into energy. I started working for a small consulting firm in the natural gas space. So this is back in the years of Enron, and I used to report on daily spot deals and monthly deals, and I can actually go back and remember some weirdness that happened. So
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
I guess, it was all telegraphed a little bit. But all roads in the natural gas space lead to, if moving up in that sector, Calgary or Houston. And then one of the things I was observing in the late 90s was the restructuring of electricity. And my mind works in a really weird, complicated way. Like I enjoy multitasking. I enjoy really, really complex things. And electricity seemed to be pretty much the most complicated thing you can think of. So I really paid attention to what was going on. And California market to restructure, the UK market, Australia, New York and Alberta were on the verge, and so was Ontario. So I wanted in on that. So the IESO, Independent Electricity System Operator, was called the IMO at the time, the Independent Market Operator. So I purposely left the consulting firm to do a little bit of a bridge. I worked for the Ministry of Energy in Ontario for several months in 1999, all with the pure view, let me try to get to the IMO. And I was hired there in late 99 as part of the project team to bring in the new wholesale market. And I worked in all of those areas of how to design the wholesale market, how to monitor the wholesale market, compliance in the wholesale market. And then we launched the wholesale market in May 2002. And it was a great experience because I was working alongside all of these individuals that had help launch the UK market, the Australian market, the Scandinavian market, Alberta market, and then all the ones in the US. And there were a lot of ex-Ontario Hydro leadership at the ISO, and I learned a lot from them. And I was very fortunate because they kind of tapped me on the shoulder at a young age to kind of be the next wave to help continue to evolve the market.
Oh, okay.
And then Ontario was in a supply crunch in the early to mid 2000s. And then that brought on the Ontario government creating the Ontario Power Authority. And because of the type of stuff I was working on at the ISO, it was a natural fit for me to go over to the OPA.
Oh.
And for 5 years, from 2005 to 2010, I was in charge of contracting for all the generation. And in those years, we contracted for 15,000 megawatts from nuclear to gas to hydro to wind and solar, biomass, demand response. And you know, I kind of thought to myself, wow, things are really cooking in Ontario. Because I was leading all the contracting, all of the independent power producers and developers were meeting with me. So I got to know them pretty well. And I kind of thought, working for these guys would be pretty cool. I know what it's like to consult. Let me go consult. And then I started to talk to John Dalton, who had started Power Advisor in 2007. He had started Navigant Consulting's business in Canada back in the late 90s.
Right.
So he had a really good reputation. I knew him before. And then he flew up to Toronto, and within half an hour, we agreed to partner.
Oh.
And then now we're 35 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you mentioned multitasking. And and one of the things that I have noticed, because you know our paths cross in a number of interesting ways and places. So you know, in addition to your work at Power Advisory, I know you're a board member at the Ontario Energy Association. You're on the board of the Canadian Renewable Energy Association. Are you board chair this year?
I just came off of that. I'm still on the board. So yeah, I did, I don't remember, like 4 years or so as board chair.
Yeah. Also advisory board of the Business Renewable Center Canada. And you're a renewable generator representative on IESO's technical panel. So that's multitasking.
Yeah, it sure is.
The one thing that connects all of those dots is renewable energy, clean energy. What are you seeing? Because you know, given both Power Advisory and then all of these other organizations that you've been involved with, I think you've got probably a unique perch can, you know, you're seeing things that probably most people don't see. So what are you seeing as sort of the big issues, the big impediments to growing and expanding clean energy in this country? You know, if there was a list of top things that we need to make sure that we do and we address so that, you know, the renewable and the clean energy sectors can expand, what are the sorts of things that you'd want us to tackle?
Right. Well, I think what we need to tackle is we need to be a lot more unapologetically bold about things. And I know we're going to talk about tariffs, and I think tariffs are probably the elixir, the starseed, or the just neutron bomb that should set that off. Because to me, Canada has a lot of untapped potential.
Yeah.
And most of that untapped potential is clean. So it's not to say that I'm anti-gas-fired generation and things like that, because I'm not. I believe that there is a mix of all of this stuff. But I believe that there is a lot of untapped potential across Canada.
Yep.
And we need to unlock it first with bold leadership. And I don't mean just government. I mean regulators. I mean system operators. I think that we need to be better at getting in our own way. I think we need to be smart about how we site and permit and approve projects. I think there are really good examples across the country about involving Indigenous peoples in projects. And all the polling that I see suggests that, yeah, on balance, Canadians are A-okay with building electricity infrastructure. So for me, that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I just believe that there's a lot of political rhetoric. There's always going to be churn. There's always going to be issues. But when you cut through all of that haze, electricity is a commodity where the fundamentals still have to be realized. Mm-hmm. Because it is such an important input commodity to how we live.
Yeah.
Whether it's our lifestyle, our economy, all of that stuff. So the simple fact is, when we need supply, we have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And the way I see things, given where Canada is at in terms of its potential and its resources, and when we do need supply in different parts of the country, and I will also push when others need supply, such as in the U.S., but yep. Then we'll park that for a second.
Yeah.
Canada is in a very strong position to extract those resources and build. We just have to get on with it and do it. So we need to be bolder, and we need to really look at all of the red tape and the regulations and all of that, and be mindful of just doing it in a smart way. And I think that there is a beacon there, and those things can be done. So I have put myself in a situation with my practice and on those various boards to try to continuously to push that stuff, mm-hmm. because I do believe that fundamentally we need it all, and we can be leaders as Canadians.
Yeah. Well, I like it. I like it. Bold leadership and mindful of the fundamentals. That's I think really, really good advice. Okay. So we parked a couple of times the question of tariffs. So let's take that out for a spin. Just for the listener, we're recording this on March 10th. This is the day when Ontario is introducing a tariff on electricity exporting to the United States.
Yeah.
We're on a pause right now for the 25% tariffs across the board, except for the things that aren't covered by the USMCA. We've got steel and aluminum tariffs that are coming down the pike at us. What do you make of this whole tariff mess?
Well, it certainly is a mess.
here's
what I think, and let me kind of preface this. I spent a lot of time in the U.S. as a kid. We were fortunate where we used to have a house in Florida. Mm-hmm. Our son plays baseball at the University of Illinois. I was just in South Florida this past weekend. I was in the Southwest the weekend prior.
Yeah.
So I'm always in the U.S. And I'm not always in the bougie places. I'm driving in the backwoods because our daughter's a big-time volleyball player, mm-hmm. And her club team plays in the U.S. a lot. So why I'm saying all that is Americans are generally good people.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a lot of hurt in America in terms of a lot of people that don't have the same sort of economic welfare that generations prior had. Mm-hmm. And you know, these are all reasons why I think President Trump was voted in for a second term. I follow the politics very closely in the U.S. because our firm is cross-border, right? So
yep.
We've got, like I said earlier, the Boston office, and we do a lot of work in the Northeast U.S., but we do work elsewhere in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I have a personal relationship because, again, our son's in school in Champaign, Illinois. So My point in all of that is, I think it's hard to hang off of the president with every single word he says.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is theater. But there is some sort of reason why he acts a certain way.
Hmm.
So my opinion is, at the end of the day, is he trying to position the U.S. to have better access to our resources? I think so. Is he trying to position the U.S. to be stronger geopolitically, when you think of the Western Hemisphere from the Arctic Circle all the way down to Latin America?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think that's why you've got rhetoric about Greenland and Canada's the 51st state and the Gulf of America and Panama Canal.
Yeah.
But my point in all of that is, I think until the dust settles, and okay, that's really what this is about, if I'm right,
mm-hmm.
What Canada should be doing is, okay, it's a wake-up call, because we're not dealing with our neighbor, our friend, our partner, the same way we have done so for decades. He's just a different thing. The administration's different.
Yeah.
So let's use that as an opportunity to not listen to everything he's saying. I'm not saying we shouldn't be at the table. Of course we should be. But let's make moves ourselves, right? And whether it's Doug Ford putting the tax or the surcharge on electricity starting today, and I just read that release this morning, 25%, which really works out, I guess, to a $10 megawatt surcharge.
Yep.
They're claiming it's like $400,000 a day or so in extra revenue for Ontarians. I mean, I think those are all tactics, and I think those are all needed tactics. But I think the bigger picture is, okay, so let's put ourselves in a stronger position over time. And let's leverage the things that we could be stronger in while helping ourselves and gaining leverage over time. And that's why I think electricity and broader energy, but I'll just stick to electricity, expanding the electricity infrastructure and speeding things up and breaking down barriers across provinces, it's a real discussion. I believe it's a real discussion. And I'm hoping that the whoever forms the next government, assuming that there's an election sometime this year federally, the specific premiers of the provinces, the heads of the provincial utilities, and the two system operators in Alberta and Ontario, if everyone can get on the same page, I think that we could be in a once-in-a-lifetime sort of renaissance in terms of building out electricity infrastructure for all the reasons that I've talked about over the last 20 minutes or so.
So has the situation in Washington and you know, with the new president and this new more muscular, how's that for a diplomatic way of putting it, a more muscular approach to Canada-US relations, is it changing the kind of advice that you're providing to your clients? Does this now, I presumably, has to kind of figure into people's calculation as they're thinking about their business going forward?
Yeah, it's changed, but it's not a dramatic change. It's kind of just it's more of a nuance, to be honest. Because remember I said earlier, our view, my view is, at the end of the day, despite all the noise about anything, the fundamentals are really what play through for electricity.
Right.
And the fundamentals still tell everybody that we need to build more, we need to maintain more, we need to expand more. So the advice to clients is, there's still a lot of business to do across Canada, despite all the rhetoric of the tariffs and all the rhetoric of the Trump administration. And I realize there's obviously uncertainty in terms of how Canada may react, how individual provinces react. But at the end of the day, the lights still have to stay on.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, the situation today is exacerbating the urgency to make sure that we are taking matters into our own hands to ensure that we're being very much expedited in terms of how we build out that infrastructure. The nuance is, I think there's going to be maybe a sea change, not a sea change, a slight change to who is building the infrastructure.
Oh, okay.
So here's an example. You know, typically you would say, okay, so what's the role of independent power producers? Well, they build stuff. They build generation. They build storage. Some of them get involved and build transmission. Well, not every independent power producer is a Canadian company.
Right.
So you've got American independent power producers that either are going to look at Canada and say there's uncertainty, or depending on how the provinces deal with this, because electricity for the most part is a provincial matter. For example, you've got the Ontario government saying we are not giving contracts to American companies. So what does that mean? Does that mean if I'm an American independent power producer, I can't bid on a project through an independent electric system operator, ISO RFP, to supply new storage or new hydro or new gas or new wind or solar? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So that's still got to play out. And it's not to say that there won't be opportunities for IPPs. One of the big things that we're saying to our clients now, and we're ratcheting up, is our utilities practice. Right?
Okay.
They're not going anywhere. And a lot of these are your members, right? So
yeah.
The BC Hydros of the world, right? NMAX, Fortis. Mm-hmm. I'm going around the country now. AltaLink. Mm-hmm. SAS Power, Manitoba Hydro, OPG, Hydro One, right? Mm-hmm. Hydro Quebec, like Newfoundland Labrador Hydro, Nova Scotia Power, New Brunswick Power, PEI, and then all the distributors, mm-hmm. right? The bigger ones, especially Toronto, Electra, just north of Toronto,
yep.
Ottawa, right? Alexicon, just east of Toronto, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of runway for those utilities to start changing their business models.
Mm.
To be a little bit more aggressive on the supply side, mm-hmm. and maybe think outside the box, and maybe not so outside the box. Not everything's about poles and wires going forward. And I think that there's a real opportunity for utilities to really step up on the supply side.
Hmm.
And some of them obviously are the ones that are vertically integrated that are sort of the provincial utilities, right?
Right.
Like we just talked about Newfoundland Labrador Hydro and Hydro Quebec, mm-hmm. right? So, yes, they can do their part, but I also think that the bigger distributors, say, in Ontario that traditionally haven't dealt with generation,
mm-hmm.
very few have.
Yeah.
Ottawa has, Oakville kind of has, but I think there's massive room for Toronto,
yeah.
Electra, Hydro One.
Wow.
And that's the nuance. The fundamentals are still there. The supply mm-hmm. is still needed. The question is, let's expand who can actually deliver it now.
Right, right. Do you see a challenge in that sort of scenario with our current approach to regulation? Do we, because that was when you were talking about, you know, we need more, we need bold leadership going forward. One of the groups that you mentioned was regulators. So this is part of it, right? This is where we need to see.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. So what does a bolder regulator look like?
I think the bolder regulator has to realize that these utilities are, they should be, at least the bigger ones,
mm-hmm.
having drivers to gravitate to more true service companies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one thing to transmit the electricity and step it down and give it to your customers. And then you're really good at that. It's reliable. And you're really good at billing and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to actually have a stake in the supply of the electricity in addition to all of that.
Right.
But I mean, this is not rocket science, right? I mean, there are utilities that are integrated in terms of different areas of electricity sector.
Yeah.
And whether it's rate regulated generation or it's a affiliate that's a mm-hmm. competitive business or an unregulated business, there's ways around that in terms of affiliation codes and rules of the game. To right. allow for contestable competition for that stuff with IPPs or other service providers like aggregators or demand response providers or storage providers. Like, all of those things can happen. I just feel that, back to the point, given everything going on today politically, backed by the fundamentals and even needing more supply,
mm-hmm.
the regulators, governments, I think they need to move faster. And I think stakeholders have to push them to move faster. And mm-hmm. I have confidence that can happen because, mm-hmm. again, the fundamentals are there, right? When you look at the map of Canada, most jurisdictions need power.
Yep. Okay. So where you're landing is you're feeling optimistic that the people that need to step up, whether government regulators, utilities, they will answer the call.
Yeah, I am, because I'm hearing a lot of different things that I've never heard before. So I kind of went through my history. So that's over 25 years of restructured energy, the lion's share of it in restructured electricity. I'm hearing leaders of utilities talk in a very different way these days.
Uh-huh.
And that was before, again, Trump and the tariffs.
Right.
So I think now that's just an elixir. That's just, again, the rocket fuel to really kick everybody in the ass to start moving forward with stuff. And so that's why I say I hope that whoever forms federal government, assuming there's an election sometime this year, combined with all of those leaders that I addressed earlier, pointed out across the country. And I think there's room for your association to be a really good hub to really foster some of these discussions and ideas and provide assistance and more of a platform. Not to say you're doing a great job. I'm saying additive to everything you're doing. I think there needs to be places where the leadership in our sector can really talk about these things towards how do we get them done.
Great. Jason, I really want to thank you for joining the podcast. Inspiring words, honestly. And I think some really good ideas and some really good direction. I love the idea of, let's be mindful of the fundamentals and that we need bold leadership. I think that's terrific. So thanks for taking the time to jump on the podcast and join us for this chat.
All right, well, anytime, and thank you, Francis.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning, and for those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Tune in for future episodes, which will include an episode about the Canada-US trade relationship, as I've said on previous podcasts, once we get some clarity about tariff actions by the administration in Washington, which continues to be a rapidly moving target. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the flux capacitor. You can find me through our website at electricity.ca, on LinkedIn, and on Instagram as the Brad Bradley. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 109. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.